Homer Lane was still a student studying fashion when he attended a series of lectures by Charles James. Lane would go on to become James's trusted assistant. But in the beginning, he was simply a young man eager to learn the art of haute couture.
Well, I was a student at Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. In the fall of 1970, he came and gave one semester seminars, like once a week. The first meeting, the room was, it was standing room only. All the chairs were filled, and people were standing around the wall. By the end of the 12 or 13 sessions, I guess, there were only four students left, and I was one. He tends to go off on tangents. I think it was hard for a lot of the students to follow along.
But Lane was drawn to James from the beginning.
The first time he brought the spiral wraparound dress from 1929, I'd never seen anything quite that simple, yet it looked complicated. So the one side of the bodice, the whole skirt wraps around the body. It's all cut from one pattern piece. Then it has the back and sleeves and another side of the bodice. And you just wind it around and hook it. It's also called the taxi dress because one of his clients in England who had it, she said, you know, you could really change in a taxi and not have to stand up. You could just unwind it and pull it off. I got more interested seeing his patterns because in school, they really teach you just the basics. You know, you have bust darts, side darts, waist darts. But his were somewhere else or no darts at all. So it really fascinated me.
James saw something special in Lane, too.
He saw more than I thought of myself in me, I guess. And he wanted me to stop school and come and work with him. And I said, no, I wanted to get my degree. So I worked with him on weeknights, on days that I didn't have classes, which was either one or two days a week, depending on the schedule, and weekends. And I would go in like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and come home at midnight or something, back to Brooklyn.
Lane was just starting out, and James had rules.
The first thing was the dog, Sputnik. He had to have a walk. So you walked Sputnik, or rather he walked you because he was a big beagle. And usually before I went home, another walk. And then in between, you know, I did patterns. He would draw, and we would also make patterns together, and I was able to follow along and sort of jump ahead of what he was doing, and I guess he liked that. We would talk about, you know, resolutions of things that we were working on, the way he wanted it, and if it were sewing, you know, he wanted it sewn a certain way. If something didn't go right, he would just explode, you know, and maybe if you were working on a pattern, it would be ripped up. And thrown up in the air. And then a few minutes later, you know, that was over. Then you got back to work as if nothing happened. He sort of railroaded anything that he started where it might work out. He wanted too much control. He didn't like to have other people do it. He wanted to control, which for his part was bad.
But Lane believed in James's vision.
Well, I thought, you know, that I might not be able to work with him. And at sometimes, you know, it was just getting to be a little bit too much, but I stuck it out. Because I think I realized, you know, that this was someone who created works of art, really.
There was another reason he stuck it out.
He was generous and he was kind. He even bought a fur coat for himself when I was in school, a brown bearskin coat. And he insisted that I take it. Well, I didn't know what I did to deserve it, but he actually insisted, you know, he would not take it back. And I still have it till this day. He was kind and considerate. A lot of people don't, you know, the stories that go around, I don't think they have that image of him.
And then there was the love they both shared of the craft and the joy they shared in getting it right.
He liked things to be perfect. If it wasn't, he reworked and reworked and recut till he got it as perfect as he could. And, you know, like if he wanted to make a garment and he was having a section that was giving problems, it was bubbling too much on one seam, he would take that pattern piece, lay down like four layers of muslin, all on different grains, and he would cut that same piece through all four layers. Then he would take that pattern piece and try it on the, if the garment were on the mannequin, take that piece out and try all of the other pieces till he found the one that was perfect, that didn't give bunching or puckering, that would make a smooth seam. He still had garments that he produced over a span of 30 or 40 years. He was always making improvements on the next one. There is one sleeve that it's called the $20,000 sleeve. And he made suit after suit, sleeve after sleeve, perfecting the fit and the shape of this sleeve. It's curved and it has a very high armhole, sort of like military uniforms from the Civil War. Because then your uniform, you had to be able to shoot a gun. So he says that, you know, that this sleeve and this jacket, if it's open, if you move your arm, it doesn't displace the front of the jacket. Most jackets, if you do that, you know, the whole front moves over.
James undoubtedly turned to architecture for inspiration.
He liked architecture. So I had a car then, so we would drive all over the city, and he could tell me, you know, if a new building went up, he could tell me what building was there before, and maybe the one before that. And he liked the South Street Seaport. A member of his family, like a great-great-grandfather, actually had a business there in shipping. So we spent a lot of time there.
Lane was also there during James's feud with Halston, a fashion designer and James's former apprentice.
He felt he didn't get his due recognition from Halston. I think he used a lot of his ideas and silhouettes and shapes, like the figure eight skirt, the wraparound pants, the bubble top. All of those things were Charles James. And the one-sided neckline, which he did in the 30s. And Halston, you know, that was his big thing, the asymmetric neckline. And he felt he didn't get recognition. That's all he wanted, was recognition.
Lane spent 7 years working with the master, and after James died, Lane inherited a treasure, his archives.
Ultimately, a collection of about 90 pieces of clothing. I had them in two storage spaces, and my closets in my apartment were full of Charles James clothes. My clothes were on a hanging rack.
He also owned a wealth of James's drawings.
Over about 1,600 drawings, I guess, in total. I didn't know there were that many until I got to counting. And he told me to hang on to these because someday they will be very important and the value would grow, which it certainly did.
Most of the clothes and archival materials are now at the Met, so the public, too, can learn from Charles James, just as Lane did so many years ago.
He was really ahead of his time. I think he would say, you know, that he deserved it, which I think he does.